Welcome to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org, political commentary and satire. On this week's show, we've got the Peak Oil Check-In by Carl Ettinger, Energy Plan Lacks Clear Goals. And most of the show will be a vehicle for the conclusion of Corporate Prime, a radio serial drama by Kevin Bayhouse about life in a post-peak oil world. Be sure to tune in next week for a special Making of Corporate Prime behind the scenes segment. But before all that, we're going to start with Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken broadcast. Not all eggs are created equal. I'm producer Gwen Sanchirico. Enjoy the show.
Bucky Bacaw here with the Backyard Chicken broadcast. As you probably already know, if you've heard my previous shows, I have an agenda. The redistribution of chickens from densely populated factory farms, which are inhumane and dangerous to public health, to a few in every yard, including suburban and urban homes. There's many reasons to keep chickens in your backyard: bug control, garden fertilization, and companionship. Because chickens are as friendly and entertaining as any animal a person might consider a pet. But the first thing that comes to most people's mind is having fresh eggs for breakfast and other meals. And with good reason. Nearly every backyard chickener is passionate about their radically fresh, nutritious, and delicious true free-range eggs. I know I am. Eggs are an excellent source of protein and of vitamins A, E, D, B12, carotenoids, the stuff that pigments vegetables like carrots and prevents eye disease, folates, which help prevent birth defects and heart disease, and omega-3 fatty acids, which are known to be good for the heart. Omega-3 is the main reason mainstream nutritionists are always telling you to eat fish, despite the sad fact that every fish in the world is now laced with mercury. Because of the fat in egg yolk, these nutrients are absorbed easily. And while that fat content is high, about 5 grams in a large egg, 70% of it is unsaturated, which nowadays we know is the good or okay fat. However, don't throw caution to the wind. Roughly a quarter of the population is genetically inclined to high cholesterol risk and have to watch their intake, eggs being notoriously high in cholesterol. As far as the nutrition of eggs is concerned, I'm in total agreement with the corporate-controlled egg commissions and industry councils, except the eggs they're selling are barely worthy of the name egg. I buck the industry spin when I tell you that free-range chickens are more nutritious for you and contain half the cholesterol of supermarket eggs. That's been the folk wisdom of backyard chickeners all along, but a few years ago, the editors of Mother Earth News, who are avid chicken people, sent their flock's eggs to a laboratory and found they contained only about half as much cholesterol, were up to twice as rich in vitamin E, and were 2 to 6 times richer in beta carotene. The free-range eggs averaged 4 times more than factory eggs. Mother Earth News also unearthed studies by universities and egg industry types, finding the same thing: more vitamins, less cholesterol, and more cholesterol-fighting omega-3s. Studies that not so mysteriously didn't get a lot of attention. You can check the article out yourself on the internet by following the link on the Bucky page at sagebrushvariety.org. That's not the only flaw in factory eggs. As I've mentioned on previous shows, all factory farms feed their chickens antibiotics, and the vast majority use growth hormones. Supposedly, drug transfer, drugs getting into the eggs, can be avoided by timed application, but chickens are not machine units, even though factory farms treat them like machines. And chicken metabolisms vary from individual to individual. Furthermore, in a factory where profits are minimized by having as few employees as possible managing massive numbers of chickens, it's unrealistic to meet precise injection schedules. Those are at least 2 reasons why study after study shows that drugs fed to hens are absorbed into the eggs they lay and wind up in the consumer's bloodstream. The growth hormones will wreak havoc on your own body chemistry, and antibiotics, for whatever benefits they may have when used properly, are ineffective when the average person is already constantly exposed through their food. Finally, when you know chickens like I do, and know how charming and intelligent they can be, you won't be willing to support an industry that raises chickens in tiny spaces, burns off their beaks, feeds them garbage, and is always coming up with new ways to raise the profit margin with the side effect of ever more atrocious cruelty. The good news is that you can have bona fide, nutritious, delicious, cruelty-free eggs. It's both easier and more difficult than you might think. The reason it's more difficult is that you can't just go to the supermarket or even the health food store and pick up some free-range eggs. Yes, you can buy something shipped in a truck from California in a carton labeled free-range, but odds are you're not getting what you think you're buying. The truth is, any egg producer, including corporate factory farms, can label their eggs free-range, even if they keep chickens on a crowded concrete floor with a small, barely visible door leading to an outdoor enclosure too small for all but a few of the chickens at a time. Unless you see the operation with your own eyes, you simply don't know what's going on, and the most likely scenario is the one I've just described. In 2005, animal rights groups from 16 states pressured the Better Business Bureau and Federal Trade Commission to consider false advertising charges against United Egg Producers for their misleading Animal Care Certified label. The animal rights group's complaint was that most consumers believed that the label meant that there were some kind of humane treatment standards applied to the hens laying those eggs. Some people even convinced themselves they were free-range and hand-slaughtered. Some believed they were put out to pasture when no longer laying eggs, when in truth, they lived out their entire lives in the industry-standard male slots, slaughtered as soon as laying slowed, and slaughtered in assembly line machines that shackled and hung conscious birds upside down, cut them with mechanical blades that often mauled instead of killed them, before drowning the suffering birds in tanks of scalding water. The lawsuits were dropped when the industry agreed to change the labels to United Egg Producers Certified and agreed to pay $100,000 to states for attorney's fees and consumer education. The consumer education money was used to make people more aware of what really goes on in factory farms. But the misleading free-range label and misplaced faith in its accuracy still persist. I'm not saying it's impossible to buy cruelty-free organic eggs. If you know where to find true free-range eggs, I encourage you to support that person. I was a vegan for several years and only started eating eggs after I started chickening. I adopted chicks from a backyard chickener who had more than she could handle because I wanted a way to eliminate earwigs from my organic garden. The eggs were originally just a side benefit, but I quickly became addicted. And I have to admit that once or twice, when my chickens weren't laying, I bought some eggs from a small farm I trusted. But I wouldn't even tell my closest friends who that was, because eggs like that are hard to find and sell out fast. The good news is that if you do like I say and have chickens in your backyard, you'll be able to just look out your window and see your hens and know exactly how they're doing, and you'll know what you're feeding them. I'm Bucky Bacall, and I had a good time. Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
Vermont's Department of Public Service recently released a draft of a comprehensive energy plan for the state. According to a law from the 1990s, energy is an important enough issue for the state to have an energy plan and to update it every 5 years. Good idea. Energy is the lifeblood of our economy, and an energy plan is as important for the state's future as an economic development plan, of which there are many. The current administration is 6 years overdue with its plan, but at least it's now out there for discussion. Unfortunately, this draft lacks most of the basics of a plan. It can be summarized by saying, "We're gonna do a bunch of stuff." The plan catalogs 27 strategies with 68 specific recommendations, but it's not clear why we'd want to follow those strategies, or what we'd accomplish if we're successful in them. let's take a look at a couple other approaches to energy planning. One is from the city of Portland, Oregon, whose peak oil task force completed their work last year. The other is a 2005 Energy Descent Action Plan, put together for the 7,000 residents of the town of Kinsale, Ireland, by permaculture students at a local college. What I'm looking for in an energy plan includes some assessment of where we are right now, how we got here, and what we can expect in the future. The Portland Peak Oil Task Force report is clear. The world's oil production is about to decline, and when it starts declining is relatively unimportant, because we're unprepared for the consequences. They recommend acting big and acting now to reduce oil and natural gas use by 50% within 25 years, just to stay ahead of the rate of depletion. The Portland report complemented the work of their earlier Local Action Plan on Global Warming. The city is also considering climate change. The Kinsale Energy Descent Action Plan begins by describing our time as the beginning of the second half of the Age of Oil. Colin Campbell, a well-known petroleum geologist, projects an even more dire scenario than Portland's. It may be as few as 13 years before the oil and natural gas available to Kinsale has shrunk to about half its current levels. As Rob Hopkins, who taught the class that wrote the plan, says, "This has implications for every aspect of life in Kinsale." The Portland plan is all about staying ahead of changes that are bound to happen anyway. With oil more expensive and less available, for example, they foresee long-distance transport of food dropping off. For them, that translates into a need to boost local food production. In Kinsale, they map that transition on a timeline. For example, by 2010, they envision a market for local food so strong that hoop greenhouses appear on open land and, quote, "the sound of chickens is once again heard in the town," unquote. By 2012, training is held in niche food production markets, like shiitake mushrooms and uncommon vegetables. None of these plans is perfect, and all of them will have to be changed as goals go unmet and conditions change in different ways than expected. What I like about the Portland and Kinsale plans is that they are explicit enough about their expectations that the people using them can tell whether they're being achieved or not, and whether goals need to be modified. With the Vermont plan, it's hard to tell where we are, or whether we're getting to where we're going, or what the obstacles are likely to be on the way. It's like planning a hike to a vaguely defined destination. You know, we're going over those mountains, without knowing much about the terrain, and consulting the weather forecast for yesterday. We can do better. I'm Carl Ettenayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org. Political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist. From Boise, Idaho.
Four months ago, I was living a whole different life. I was a security officer for the Corby City in the eastern part of Cascadia in the now defunct United States. It used to be the world's superpower until the oil wars that ensued a few decades ago. The wars were brought on by the decline of oil availability. That spurred all the world's military powers to hoard as much remaining oil and gas reserves as possible. Civil war reduced all of these countries to fractured has-beens. Within each nation-state, people warred with themselves over the table scraps of the natural resources needed to continue their decadent lifestyles. Life turned very dark after the oil wars left charred remains of what was once a functional society, smoking in the ruins of capitalist enterprise. I've been through a lot the last few years, but I probably shouldn't complain. I'm not sure there's any such thing as the easy life anyway. Lately I've been thinking we're better off without it. My name is David Ortega, and this is my story. I don't see any sign of the assault team anywhere.
Can I use your binoculars for a while?
Believe me, it won't help. The magnification on this is incredible. I'm seeing everything from scavengers to bugs, but no sign of the team.
That's just it. You have a lot to look at, and I've explored this valley so many times and from so many angles, I might be more likely to spot a well-hidden assault team. No offense.
No offense taken. Here you go.
It is pretty, though. I'll give you that. Hold on. Okay. I don't see them either, but here's a thought. See over there at 2 o'clock? That thick growth of sagebrush?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, now look over there through the binoculars.
Yes? What's there?
That's where the draw I showed you on the map emerges. It's a natural path in that rough terrain, and based on where the mine went off, and my hunch about their strategy, I think the assault team will pass through that spot.
I like your analysis. I'm convinced.
Should we set up here and stake out the area? Is this the place? Huh?
That's what we're deciding.
We'll have a good field of fire. And Toby seems to like it.
Let's set up here, then.
Toby, I noticed Sean had a scope on his rifle.
He's the best shot from our defense training group. He's the sharpshooter.
Great. Have him set up there, on that high ground. Put Zalima over there. Monica, you and I will set up between them.
Will do. Okay, guys. Zalima, you there. Sean, you're our sharpshooter, so we want you there. Position. Good. Now lock and load.
Ugh. Brother. Don't get too excited, Toby. Remember, we don't want to go shooting early or without good reason.
Right. We gotta watch our ammo and we don't want to give up our position.
You got it. You can get in position now.
Yes, sir.
Now we wait.
Now we wait.
It's been about 20 minutes. No sign.
Give it time. I know I'm right.
So, what's the story with you and Lenny?
What?
You guys have something going on?
I don't follow.
Are you romantically involved?
Oh! Why do you ask?
I don't know. I just thought that I, picked up on, vibes.
Really? I didn't have you figured as the type to be so observant of interpersonal, emotional stuff.
I'm not. I was just making conversation, and I was wondering how Lenny was adjusting.
Lenny and I are pretty close. We both escaped to Boise around the same time. After his wife was murdered, he kind of married his politics. And I've always pretty much been a loner.
Me too. I'm a loner too, I mean. What kind of role does a loner find in a place like this, where everything's about community?
You know, what often makes something fascinating are the contradictions and...
What was that?
That was Sean's bird call signal. He spotted something.
Let me scan with your binoculars. I see them.
Toby, radio Pat. Ask her to send everyone out this way.
Right. Razor base, this is Razor 4. Corpy sighted. Repeat, Corpy sighted. Over.
We should wait until they're out in the open, then take our best shot.
Agreed. We should let Sean fire first, since he's the sharpshooter. Then we'll all follow up.
Pat's sending her group. We just have to hold them here or finish them off.
Good. Here's the plan, Toby. On our signal, Sean will take his best shot. After that, fire at will.
Gotcha. I'll go tell him.
Looks like we're all ready.
Any moment now. They're getting into the open. Okay. Now! Save ammo!
Sean definitely got one, maybe two.
We've got him pinned down pretty good.
If I were them, I'd try to go right back up that draw.
And there they go.
Let's go after them. If we can chase them right into Razor 3, they'll be history. Look, blood. I guess one was wounded. That'll slow him down.
Be careful. They might be trying to leapfrog us.
What's that?
They'll try to hold us back by letting one guy stay behind and pin us down while the others move down the trail. Then the last one catches up while another stays behind and does the same thing again.
I'll pull out ahead and signal if I spot him.
Okay, be careful.
I'll be all right.
We should radio Pat and let her know.
Already on it.
Razor Base, this is Razor 4. Over. Do you copy, Razor Base?
We copy, Razor 4. Have you sighted the assault team? Over.
Affirmative. A brief firefight ensued. One corpy dead, maybe two corpies wounded. Over.
Roger that, Razor 4. Razor 3 and 1 are moving fast to your position. Over.
Copy that, Razor Base. We should meet in under an hour. Over.
Affirmative, Razor 4. Razor Base out.
Looks like we keep on hiking for a while.
Unless they try that leapfrog thing, or worse, double back around us.
Yeah, that's possible too.
Hey, they've stopped. Something's up.
What did you see?
One of them is hiding behind a rock near the top of that next rise. It might be a leapfrog tactic like David was saying.
Any sign of the others?
No, nothing.
Guess we'll just wait. That'll give Razor 1 and 3 time to get here.
I wish we had more people with us.
Yeah, I'd feel more comfortable.
That sounded like Sean's rifle.
You're right, Monica. They're coming back.
Look, there goes one over the hill.
You think I can flush out the one behind the rock?
Try it. That'll ruin their plan.
There he goes.
He just ran over the ridge.
Sean said that he spotted two of them trying to double back toward him. He got one, so there's only two left.
If we've cut them down to two people, then the dam is safe.
I feel sick about this. I knew these guys. They're just stupid, like I was.
Me too, David.
I should have figured out sooner why Bearclaw sent me. I could have stopped this.
David, it's us or them. We need to stay on their trail.
Where are they?
I don't see anything.
I'll go with Zalima and swing around the left.
Monica, why don't you and Sean take the right? I'll work my way down this trail slowly until I meet you all on the next ridgeline.
Okay.
Be careful.
Ortega.
Who's there?
It's team leader. It's Arnold.
Arnold, just give yourself up.
What the hell are you doing, helping these Aggies?
Why are you attacking them?
Oh, come on. They hate freedom. They fed you their propaganda and dazzled you with their best behavior, only because they need you. Now you're throwing away that amazing deal Bearclaw offered you, and corporate town principles, like they were nothing. He should have sent a military guy, like me.
What he offered me was a bribe, not an opportunity. There's no corporate ladder to climb in New Arco, and what would you know about freedom?
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Believe it. Look, Arnold, you can't win. You can't get to the dam, give up now, and walk away free.
What'll happen to me if I give up?
You can start over with a new life. That's what I'm doing.
Did they drug you? If I'm lucky, they'll put me in some work camp where they'll brainwash me. They'll do the same with you now that they don't need you to fight us.
They didn't need me. They knew what you were up to even before I did, and they knew how to stop you better than I did.
Forget it, David. I've worked with a lot of ex-corpies, and I can tell when they're a lost cause.
Monica, I didn't know you were there.
Sorry, I didn't want to walk into a trap, so I had to wait until I knew why you were talking to this guy. Hello, team leader.
This isn't over. I've got another man in the vicinity.
I've, already caught up with him. And one of our other teams picked up your wounded guys and is bringing them back to town. They'll probably make it.
What are you going to do with me now?
I'm going to take your weapons away, and I'm going to set you loose in hopes that I never hear your grating voice ever again. But first, I am going to have to hold on to you for a couple of days until we figure out whether you've hidden any supplies around here and make sure the dam really is secure.
Yeah, right. A few days.
I don't care if you believe me or not. Just throw down your weapons and your pack and shut up. The best thing about finishing a really tough job is having an excuse for a party when it's done.
Oh, I don't know. I say you work when you have to work, and you throw a party whenever you feel like it. I don't need to justify a good time. Why should anyone?
I guess that's the corporate town work ethic. Everything has a price, and we bought this party by saving the hydro plant from getting blown up by the assault team.
I don't know about all this bot stuff, but if the dam had blown up, we would have lost a lot of lives and then a lot of crops, which probably would have been more lives. It would have taken a long time to recover from that, if we ever could have. So if you need a reason to celebrate, saving the dam is as good as any in my book.
Well, I'm having so much fun, I'm having trouble remembering what I considered a good time in Corpytown.
Hey guys, is this an amazing party or what?
Sure is, Toby.
Hey Toby, isn't that Sean over there? Have you toasted to his health yet?
Not yet. I better go do it. See you guys later.
See ya.
Should I feel guilty about not wanting to be around that kid?
No, just because everyone here cooperates doesn't mean we have to like everyone all the time.
It's not like there's anything to hate about him. I just don't want him around.
You should feel bad. He just needs to spend more time with grown-ups so he can learn how to act like one. Now that he's got the body of one. I think I'll go ask him to dance.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Oh, honey, I'm way past that. Ciao. Oh, Toby.
She's a handful.
How would you know?
I mean, you know, she's very exuberant compared to what I'm used to in a person.
Don't explain. I'm just teasing. Are you nervous or are you just enjoying this tune?
What?
You're tapping your feet like you want to dance.
I do like this music. Do you dance?
Well, I'm not great at it, but with the right partner, I like it.
Come on, dance with me.
Really? All right. Hey, you're a natural. Must come from running around the factory catwalks as security guard.
Thanks. I've never danced to real live music, though. Anyway, don't remind me of that place. I'm starting to feel like this is where I was meant to be all along.
Some days I feel that way, too.
Some days.
Well, David, you really can dance. What other special skills have you been hiding from me? Monica, mind if I join you guys? I think Toby has learned all he can for the night.
I'm kind of running out of steam anyway. Maybe you can keep up with David.
You gonna stay and dance with me, David?
Of course I will, Pat.
Whoa, wait up, Monica. Here comes Lenny. He's gonna need a partner.
Well...
Lenny, I was wondering when you'd join the party.
I gotta talk to the three of you.
Great, we can gossip while we boogie.
I don't think so. Let's go outside.
Lenny, what's going on? I know this tone too well.
Come on, sweetheart, we're having a good time. Can't this wait till tomorrow? There's a time and place.
Pat, this is one of those moments where I need you to wrap your head around the fact that Boise can't be all fun all the time,
okay? Now hold on there!
Okay. Let's hear this. Come on, everybody.
What the hell were you thinking?
What are you talking about, Lenny?
And you're in there whooping it up like this is the greatest day? I hope the council doesn't get wind of this. That'll just top it off.
What is wrong, Lenny? The dam is safe. We chased Corpytown out of our lives. Maybe for good.
Monica, David just got here, so I understand what's going on with him. But you know what our values are supposed to be. And your parents were Quakers to boot. I swear I'll never understand you.
Lenny, for the third time, what is your problem?
My problem is that you massacred those guys.
They were an assault team, Lenny. It was us or them. You know how corporate prime missions work. They were told to blow up that dam at all costs.
You had them outnumbered. Our guns may not be as fancy, but we know that terrain much better than they do. And your sharpshooter, that guy with the accuracy to disable, went ahead and blew one of those guys away.
I know where you're going with this, Lenny, and I hear ya. I know this community is committed to nonviolence, but when we found out that corporate prime was onto us and that it was just a matter of time before they attacked, we all agreed. Not just the council, the whole town, in one of the purest consensus decisions in our history, that we had the right to defend ourselves. That's why we have a militia in the first place.
This doesn't make any sense.
You weren't out there, Lenny. What do you know? I know if you were with us, you would have done the same thing. Damn it, we risked our lives. We don't deserve this lecture.
Okay, all right, I hear you. But you have to understand that I'm the one who had to go to the council and explain why we have blood on our hands when we could have avoided it. And honestly, I know I wasn't out there, but I'm telling you, you didn't try hard enough to disable and capture. Do you know what Toby said to the council chair's daughter?
Toby?
He said, "We iced that bastard." What is that?
He's just a kid.
Exactly. And that's why you should have been reining him in out there. And here's the part I really love. The bastard you iced, you know who he was?
I do. I played cards with his dad from way back. And when he got old enough, he joined the games. Don't think I don't feel bad for what happened. But I know he thought of himself as a soldier. He would have killed any of you if he had the chance.
I swear, David, you are such a sap. What you fail to realize is that his brother escaped to Boise just last month. His father, your card buddy, was a sympathizer and sometimes a source of information for us. His whole family was conflicted about him joining the Corpytown Armed Forces, but they were hoping he'd get tired of having team leader Arnold squawking orders at him all day and would defect like his brother. But now he's dead!
Wait a second, how are we supposed to know that?
Pat, it shouldn't make a difference whether you knew that. What you are supposed to know, to believe, at the core of your being, is that our way of life is about holding ourselves to a higher standard. We're not just protecting a bit of turf. We're trying to form a new way of life out of the disaster the world has become. And just when I think we're getting there, something like this happens.
What do you expect us to do now? What's done is done.
Yeah, but the consequences are going to be around for a long damn time. I need you guys to lay low for a while. Don't be dancing in the streets while I'm trying to do damage control on your bad decisions. Sign up for extra detail, work hard and with humility, so everyone can see how much you really care about this community.
We do care about this community. You want us to ham it up so we don't damage your political career? And you're telling us to live by a higher standard.
This isn't about me, and it's not about politics. This is reality. I'll talk to you people in the morning. Get some rest.
The heck with him. I'm going in for another drink. And to check on my new friend, Toby.
I don't know. I really resent all he just said, but part of me thinks he's right. Either way, I'm definitely not in the mood for a party anymore. I'm going home. Are you coming with me?
Yeah.
Chief, I hope you're here with good news. Are we still getting all that Chomsky babble when we try to monitor the Aggies' transmissions?
Not anymore. The transmissions went silent about an hour ago. I was waiting to see if I could hear anything.
So there's nothing now?
Not a peep. It's dead air.
Did you call for our people?
As soon as the jamming ceased.
Both the strike team and Ortega?
Yes, sir. No word from either.
This plan is totally falling apart. If this mission fails, Corporate Prime is going to have my head on a platter.
It's too soon to determine failure. We need to give them time to reach us, now that we can hear.
Have you tried any of the other frequencies?
Yes, I have, even though we clearly told them to use the assigned frequency.
Okay, things go wrong, but this is too much. It's like this mission was doomed from the start.
They taught us in combat school there's no such thing as luck. Maybe I made some bad moves.
Or I gave bad orders?
I didn't say that, sir.
Good. And I'm not talking about luck. I'm talking about monkey wrenching.
What does that mean?
It's a 20th century term coined by eco-terrorists.
Eco-terrorists?
Yes. People who claim to be saving the natural environment from destruction but really just hated the capitalist system that defines humanity. They hated humanity, so they would sabotage mining operations, construction projects, anything that furthered human development.
And you think the Aggies are eco-terrorists?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. But what I was saying is I'm starting to wonder if we've been monkey-wrenched. Sabotaged. What if there's some kind of spy that tipped off the Aggies? What do you say to that?
Well, you can't account for everybody. But ever since we killed Habib's wife, there's been no evidence of any more Aggie agents.
It's your job to know for sure. Are you deflecting the issue?
No, sir.
I've been too easy on you. I've been too easy on everyone. I've tried to be more compassionate, more in touch with the workers than the typical corporate prime manager. Now I'm paying the price. Sooner or later, you'll have to pay the price too.
I'm doing the best I can with what I've got to work with.
You're going to have to get more creative. We've got spies. I can feel it. I want you to find them.
If we've got spies, the first thing they're going to do is go cold and stop their operations. They'll just wait us out.
Why do I get the sense you don't even want to find them?
My team will do everything in our power to root out any moles or saboteurs. I'm just telling you in advance that we can't give you instant results. This may take some time.
Well, you'd better get cracking, huh?
Yes, sir.
Let me know if any news comes in. Meanwhile, I've got to compose another failure report to Corporate Prime.
Okay, next on tonight's Boise Council agenda is a proposal from Leonard Habib. Lenny, are you ready to begin?
Yes, thank you. In light of the recent attempted destruction of the Lucky Peak Dam, I'd like to present a plan to strike back at Corporate Prime. First, I'd like to introduce David Ortega. David, come on up.
Hi. I'm David Ortega, and I was sent by Bearclaw, the CEO of Corporate Prime's new Arco site, to spy on this community. As you probably know by now, once I got here and met a few people, I decided not to follow my orders. I helped prevent the hydroplant sabotage.
Thanks, David. Yes, David's assistance was instrumental in our being able to stand here today. The proposal is as follows. We want to send David back to New Arco City and tell Bearclaw that the mission was foiled because there are moles in his administration. We're going to make Bearclaw crazy with suspicion about his security staff and city officers until the whole operation starts to fall apart.
Whoa, hold on a second. I'm sorry to interrupt, but before you go any further, are you going to ask us to invest even more resources into leading some kind of offensive plan against Corporate Prime?
Well, yes, but...
Do you have any idea how much fuel and supplies, not to mention energy, we sacrificed to protect the dam? We can't afford to divert any more resources if we're not under direct attack in some way.
Okay, everyone. Can we let Lenny finish explaining his proposal? Or do we need to have a discussion before proceeding? Alright, Lenny, I don't think there's a lot of support for your plan. Why don't you just summarize the rest as briefly as you can, and then you can take questions later.
Okay. The plan is to send a team to New Arco City and manipulate Bearclaw's paranoia to enhance the unrest already brewing there to create a rebellion, during which New Arcoers will be given information about our community here, and we will help anyone who wants to break out and join us. While we're there, we'll disable their radio transmitter so they can't communicate with the other corporate towns. With David's circumstances, we have a unique advantage that we may not have ever again.
Understood. Comments? Gene?
Haven't we injured enough people already? Let's not make things any worse.
That's just it. If we work now to disable Corporate Town rule, it'll collapse before more lives are lost.
Lenny, you're speaking out of turn. Come on, you know how this process works.
Sorry.
Yeah. Valon?
It's harvest season. Securing our food supply is our first priority.
Sal?
Don't we already have an underground network feeding information to people in Corpytown? I say if there's going to be any rebellion, they need to do it themselves. We don't have the people to spare.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone have comments in support of Lenny's proposal? No. Counselors, your advice. Counselor Cho.
I see no support for this plan. We captured, in some form or other, everyone sent over here from New Arco, so we're safe now.
Mm-hmm. Counselor Beckham.
You managed to kill a man and injure two others in this recent hydroplant incident. Something that could have been avoided. It's one thing to defend ourselves from corporate operatives attacking our community, and I believe violence should be the last resort, only in the case of self-defense. If we are going to invest any resources into self-defense, it should be to prepare for future nonviolent resolutions, not to go out on an offensive attack.
Thank you. And you, Counselor Marcus.
I grew up in a corpy town, as many of us have, and it's a terrible, terrible existence. My heart goes out to those trapped in such places. However, what we have here is very special, and we need to focus on keeping it that way. We can't save everyone in the corpy towns without risking everything we have worked to build here. There are 50,000 people in the Treasure Valley. If we go out on the attack, we are putting every single one of them at risk. Sorry, Lenny, I do understand where you're coming from.
Thank you, Counselor Marcus. Any other comments? Counselor Deakins?
I've already made my comment.
Anyone else? Lenny?
No.
Okay. Any other comments? Anybody? Okay, let's get a sense vote. Those for attacking Corpytown. All right, those for taking no action. Lenny, I'm sorry, but your proposal doesn't seem to have any supporters.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Lenny. Thank you, David. Welcome to the community. Okay, next on tonight's agenda is Olga Hurlbutt with a request for permission to build a demonstration Fresnel Lens solar power workshop. Olga?
Thanks, Bruce. I've been experimenting with uses for the Fresnel lenses one of the salvage teams discovered in an old warehouse a few months ago. In case you weren't aware, we found a supply of 15,000 large plastic lenses, about a square meter in size. They're basically a thick sheet of plastic with ridges on them. You use them for magnification, but I've found that they make amazing solar ray concentrators. You can focus about 1,000 watts of sunlight into a single square centimeter. I've been playing around with them and have come up with practical applications for boiling water, cooking...
I'm sorry to hear the council meeting didn't go the way you or Lenny planned, but you have to learn not to take these things so personally.
How can I not take it personally? It was like they were saying, how can we trust this murderous monster with another mission?
Lenny says the main reason the plan didn't go through was that no one believed we had the resources.
Even if that's true, the fact remains that I joined the community and then there's bloodshed. I'm sure people think it's cause and effect.
David, I can imagine how you'd feel that way. But you were the one who questioned the violence after Sean shot the second guy, remember? I was the one who told you to stay on the trail. Look at me, I've been here a lot longer than you have, so I'm supposed to know better. So I'm at least equally responsible for what happened.
How do you deal with it, with everyone looking at you and seeing someone who's betrayed the community's values?
Because one of the things everyone is truly committed to here is the idea that we're growing and learning together. I've really learned not to nurse my grudges the way I used to, because everyone else set such a good example. My first year here, I single-handedly destroyed an entire acre of potatoes when I left an irrigation flue open overnight. I could have killed myself from shame. 3 months later, I was drinking a batch of Lenny's homebrew with a bunch of his friends, and I recognized one of the guys from that crew. I guess I got a little drunk, and I just started crying about how bad I still felt. And the guy just honestly couldn't understand. He said, I was glad when we left the flue open that it happened on a crop and a season where we could recover, and it forced us to come up with a better system before we ever had a true disaster. And I was like, don't patronize me. I knew it was all my fault. I left the flue open. And he just blinked at me and repeated, the crew left the flue open, and it all worked out fine.
That was nice of him.
I guess you could interpret it that way. If you messed up and I said something like that, it would be because I wanted to make you feel better. But coming from anybody who's lived here a long time, it's different than nice. It's like, their brains work differently. The work committees, the councils, even informal dining room conversations. Some people will be so stubborn. Others will pound the table. other people will accuse each other of what to them is an insult. You know, like, that's propertarian thinking, or that's amoral individualism. The debate seemed like they could go on all night, and then all of a sudden, everyone changes their mind at once. Or there's still dissent, but they all agree there's no more to be said. And if most of them agree, then that's what everyone signs on to. But either way, once the debate is closed, all the tension of the debate just disappears.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, well, you'll see plenty of it soon enough.
You sound like you don't like it.
Don't get me wrong. I love it. I really do. And I love them. It's just that I'm not a part of it, and I don't know if I ever can be. They don't see it as them and me. To them, I'm just as much a part of the community as everyone else. To them, I'm as much a part of the community as anyone else. It's something I really value. But honestly, it scares me sometimes. That's why I throw myself into my work, so everyone can see how valuable I am. But I also move around a lot, so no one can see how strange I really am.
I guess you're scaring me a little, too. Maybe for a while I could join the same work crews as you. This way it'll be easier for both of us, since we're both different in similar ways.
David, can I be really honest with you?
That's what this community is all about, right?
I feel like you're my responsibility because I sort of recruited you.
Responsibility?
You know what I mean. I know how hard it can be trying to fit in.
Why couldn't we just work together for a little while?
David, I really like being with you and learning about you, but I think you'll learn to fit in better if you didn't rely on me. And everyone will think it's suspicious of two ex-corpies becoming joined at the hip.
Well, aren't you and Lenny close friends? Was that a problem?
That's different. I mean, look at what happened on the Hill. Didn't you get the sense that Pat didn't want us to be a team in the first place? Then she did, and then we iced the bastard.
Stop saying that. It's not funny.
I'm not being funny.
It was an unfortunate thing we did, but we can't dwell on it. And if we can't support each other in the meantime, who will? Are you trying to tell me something else? I thought we got along.
We do. And we will. I mean, there's a lot of people in the area, but you'll be amazed how often you run into the same person. For instance, I couldn't get away from Lenny if I wanted to.
Why would you want to? I know more about Lenny in the past few days than I ever learned about my supposed friends in corporate prime. It was awkward for a while. Now we work together like a real team. Forget that. I don't want to talk about Lenny. I want to know why we can't talk about whether we want to travel together for a while. I don't even care much if it's a friendship or a partnership or something else. After all that's happened, why are you suddenly pushing me away? What are you afraid of?
I just think that if we're always connected at the hip, it'll be that much more difficult for you to really integrate into life here. To meet people on your own terms.
Oh, so this is for my own good.
Well, yes.
I never said anything about connected at the hip. That's your words, your imagination. And I'm not going to beg you to spend time with me, but if you're going to reject me so thoroughly, I want to know why.
Well, maybe you will fit in really well, because you certainly know how to push an issue like a local.
I just want the dignity of a real answer. Then we can still be friends, or whatever you're trying to say.
Fine. Living in a corporate town marks you. Maybe for life. If we're together, we're just going to fall into all the same habits. Aggressive conflict resolution, selfishness, feelings of ownership, property, entitlement.
How do you know all of this?
I just do.
That's not your real reason. You must really think I'm stupid. Maybe I wasn't a very good spy, but that's because my heart was never in it. Now I know what I want, and I'm not distracted by all the garbage, so stop playing games with me. There's ex-Corpy Town couples here. Some of them came here together. Some of them met after they settled. There are people in monogamous and not-so-monogamous relationships. No one is encouraged or discouraged from any kind of arrangement because the community comes first for everyone.
Who told you that? Pat?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
It seems so easy when you first get here, but you'll see.
Okay, I'm not getting anywhere with you. I'll talk to you later.
Wait, don't leave like this.
Like what?
Like you're giving up on me, abandoning me.
What are you talking about? No one gives up on anyone here, right?
Right.
We'll catch up with each other soon. This is gonna sound stupid, but I'm really glad that you were assigned to spy on me.
And I'm glad I was able to recruit you. I promise you, David, you won't regret it.
It's hard to believe it's only been a few months since I settled here in Boise. Sometimes I almost forget all about corporate prime. Then I catch myself thinking in old ways, or I wake up from that dream where you forgot to submit your work report and you're running around trying to put something together as if your life is at stake. But the main thing is that a threat of another attack from corporate prime is still possible. Lenny still runs an underground railroad out of that place, and he still has his spies. They say the organization is falling apart in so many ways at once that even Barrickla has run out of lies and is turning to excuses. Most people believe it's just a matter of time before it collapses under its own weight. It's the last vestige of the way of life when oil was still gushing from the ground, and it's amazing that it's lasted this long. Still, Lenny is taking no chances and is running his disinformation program. Or should I say, a disinformation program. According to him, it's not defying the council because it's a substantially different plan than the one he proposed, and it falls under some earlier program they had approved. They seem to know about it, but are looking the other way, which he sees as more evidence that he's still honoring the consensus of the community. I choose to believe him, but I've come to realize that he does like to test the boundaries. Pat is right about him. He'll always be a politician, no matter how dedicated to the dream of this community he is. Still, we're closer than ever. When he gave me another chance to help disrupt corporate prime, I turned him down because I had realized I just wanted to put Corbytown behind me, and I really wanted to explore new interests. The incredible thing was, he reacted like it was the best news he'd heard in weeks, slapping me on the back and telling me I was a terrible spy anyways, and maybe I'd make a better farmer. And I do like to grow things. I like it so much that I requested housing with land attached. So when I get home from the fields, I have my own garden to play in. I'm pretty good at it, learning a lot faster than I'm learning to play the didgeridoo at least. And I'm not sure why Pat is still letting me act in her latest play. It's not like I have a lead role, but still, she has to come over regularly to coach me privately, just so I don't look totally awkward on opening night. With all the stuff I try, I'm still too afraid to commit, and way too afraid to take risks until I know all the facts. I can still keep my emotions so far from the surface that everyone wonders what I'm really thinking, but since I stopped playing poker, I'm not sure that that quality does me much good. It's a funny story. Monica came over unexpectedly to invite me to a poker game, a reunion with all the people I played with when I still thought I was a secret spy. When I told her I really wanted to spend time with her and the group, but had kind of lost interest in poker, she started laughing hysterically. Finally, she told me that none of them had ever played before that night, except for Ken. They had recruited him from the clinic because they thought a game would be a good way to gain my trust and get more information from me. They all fell in love with the game and play it all the time. It's starting to catch on in the community. So much so that the council discussed whether or not it was a bad influence. So when I went and played, I cleaned them all out, and I have to admit, I felt pretty good about myself for a couple of days. You can change a lot here, but there's some stuff so basic about a person, it'll never really change. Monica's the perfect example. She's one of the hardest farm workers anyone's ever seen, but as soon as she gets praise for it, she starts to slack off. Behind her back, work crews discuss where she would be most needed and figure out ways to get her to volunteer for those assignments. Everyone keeps tabs on her and gossips about her, but she'd never know it because she likes to think of herself as the mysterious lone wolf. Unfortunately, I don't have as much patience as everyone else for the way that when we start to get close again, she just disappears. Boise doesn't really change anyone, but it does bring out the best in them. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist.
Smog, breathing in the fumes of a multitude of large SUVs.
Waiting, sweating, idling, sweltering, waiting,
choking,
suffering,
overheating.
When are we gonna start to move?
Trapped inside a box, like a metal cage, on the highway plagued by short-term vision.
Burning up fuel, as if it grew on trees. We're running out of oil, but that's fine with me.
Waiting,
sweating,
idling, sweltering.
Waiting,
choking,
suffering,
overheating.
When are we gonna start to move?
When are we gonna start to move?
This week's Sagebrush Variety Show was conceived, written, performed, and produced by Robert McMinn, Kevin Bayhouse, April Hoy, and Gwen St. Curico, and was funded in part by a grant from the Green Institute. For more information on the content discussed on this program, visit our website at sagebrushvariety.org. Write to us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Thanks for listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show.